Lowculture.com proudly presents No Jacket Required.
There's no quicker way to see the absurdity of the culture.
Slapping glitter on everything.
And what if I don't like it?
It's a look, isn't it?
She keeps telling us that she's a good Catholic girl.
Hello and welcome to No Jacket Required, a casual Friday kind of look at today's art scene. In the know, off the cuff, and no holds barred. That's No Jacket Required. My name is Guy Boombast, and I'm joined in Studio 4D tonight with a film director, Tilde. Good morning, Tilde.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Good to have you here.
Yes, it's good to be here.
Great. Now, just to get this out of the way, your name is Tilde, but it's not the actual word Tilde. It's that little squiggle above the N that you see on the menu in Mexican restaurants, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
And you started your career directing music videos for the likes of Linkin Park, System of the Down, Cat Bruiser. What was your first I'm sorry, Tilde. I just thought we asked you to turn the cell phone off.
You know what? I'm waiting on this call. It's a casting dilemma.
I understand, but, you know, I'm trying to ask you what it was like directing your first movie, and...
Hey, I loved it, man. It was a dream. I waited my whole life for this. I've got to take this.
Fascinating. We'll have more with Tilde...
Okay, talk to me.
We'll have more with Tilde later in the show. But right now, a report on the exciting changes
in one
of America's scariest cities. From Patrick Amalcitone.
Once upon a time, Detroit, Michigan was one of America's worst cities. Burns out riot heap of filth, violence, and drug suck. If Bosch could have painted Dante's ninth level of hell, whilst Edward Gorey sodomized the Book of Revelations, you might have some idea of the socio-rot that plagued this once thriving city. But today, the parade of death and decay seems merely a bad memory. The city is experiencing an arts revival that has transformed its once violent streets into a mecca for artists throughout Michigan. Here at downtown Detroit's Twin Pines Galleriesium, the city's rebirth is especially evident. Once the target of street gangs and bone thugs, today, a Target retail store attracts excited consumers. Entering the superstore, I met Ed Lyman, an elderly greeter. His pin says, "I'm here to help," and his smile says the same thing. "I'm here to help." I spoke to him about Detroit's arts revival.
Time was, people would come in and I'd have to work double time to get them to smile. Now people are smiling already.
That must make your job a lot easier.
Well, yes and no. You see, they tend to keep on...
Great. If you could direct me to the Detroit Arts Revival?
Well, I'm not sure. Maybe aisle 14?
Ed was a character. Continuing through the Galleriesium, I stumbled upon a thriving arts gallery nestled between Ann Taylor Loft and Lids. Called Prints Plus, I spoke with the gallery's director, Vanessa Ovaloid. Tell me about the art scene here in Detroit.
Lately, we've been seeing a lot of unicorns, dragons, that kind of thing. Scarface. Scarface is very popular.
So it's really everything from the surreal to a kind of neo-realism?
Yeah, sure. Here we see 99 reasons why a beer is better than a woman.
Number 72 is quite provocative.
Yes, quite. But this is really indicative of a genre that was more popular 2-3 years ago.
The conceptual pieces.
Exactly. When I got my MFA, I thought I'd be working with more avant-garde work, but it's really nice to know that I'm part of Detroit's revival.
Leaving the gallery, it wasn't too far along the Galleriesium's Corridor A, right by the food court and escalators, that I discovered a vibrant dance culture in full frontal renaissance. It's called Dance, Dance, Revolution, and these Terpsichoreans are less Twilitharp than the rhythm of the street. The dancers refused to speak to me. In fact, some became downright surly. But such is the life of the artist. The artistic ecstasies lasted late into the night when I attended a stunning performance of the musical Pippin at Detroit's PS48. What brought you to the show tonight, sir?
Well, my kid's in the thing, so I didn't really have much choice in the matter.
And isn't it nicer to see that child in a Bob Fosse musical instead of a police lineup?
Yeah. You know what? I guess it is.
And that grudging acknowledgement, I think, says it all. Kudos, Detroit. Kudos.
And kudos to Patrick Amalcitone for that moving report. I'm back here in Studio 14A with director Tilde. Now, Tilde, your first film is going to be a remake of the movie Spanglish, a film that was released not even a year ago. What is it that drew you to the project?
I read the script, and I just fell in love with it. And you know, I got people telling me that the movie's already been made. It just came out. My feeling was, no studio head, no scared public. They're not going to keep me from telling my story.
But why not wait at least, you know, just a couple of years?
Hey, there's a reason the film has endured, right? Ultimately, it's as true and honest now as it was back then. People are really the same, even though things have changed a lot since the movie came out.
Well, not that much has changed.
No, oh, you gotta be kidding me. When that came out, December 17th, 2004, Bush was still serving his first term in office. Now the president's in his second term. And people used to associate Adam Sandler with that role in Spanglish, but now they associate him with that football movie. And you know what? They'll probably remake that in a year, too.
Well, actually, The Longest Yard is a remake.
My point exactly.
Wow, fascinating, really. Assuming you're alluding to this Aristotelian idea that there are really only five stories to be told.
No. I mean, it's just every movie is really just a remake of another movie.
Well, surely that can't be true.
Yeah, it's so true.
Well, what about the first movie that was ever made? What was that a remake of?
Real Life? Real Life is the first movie.
Wow, fascinating. Really, fascinating. But now we're going to hear an equally fascinating report from Jessica Turpentine with a report on a new trend in politics that has the fashion world buzzing.
Fashion Week in New York. The most fashionable people in the world, during the most fashionable week of the year, soaking in the most fashionable fashion you could find this side of Milan. Here at the cutting-edge Imitation of Christ runway show, the scene is through the roof, and that roof is on fire. But even the casual observer would notice something unusual about today's crowd. Nestled between Andre Leon Talley and Lindsay Lohan sits the unlikely figure of Senator Rick Santorum. And just two rows behind him, Supreme Court Justice David Souter studiously eyes Tara Simcoff's daring designs. What exactly is going on here? Senator Rick Santorum tries to explain.
Well, I felt it was important to update my wardrobe for the coming session, and I support any clothing line that supports Christ.
How did conservative senators end up sitting alongside fashionistas who represent everything they despise? Well, it all started in the British Halls of Parliament.
And I suggest that the Falklands...
Nice trousers!
Look at his lapels!
Nasty rhythm and blues!
Nasty rhythm and blues, incidentally, is Cockney rhyming slang for bad shoes. Soon enough, the runway and Parliament had formed an unlikely alliance, and it wasn't long before their counterparts across the pond took the fashion-forward cue. I spoke with celebrity and cabinet staff stylist Renee Rene about the change.
It used to be that you just saw politicians' wives who were the real fashion plates. Nancy Reagan, Jackie Kennedy, Sarah Childress Polk. She was Polk's wife.
That's James K. Polk.
Exactly.
What do you think is responsible for the shift?
I really don't know.
No idea?
No.
The trend has gone so far that the pages of the traditionally staid Congressional Quarterly now feature a fashion hall of shame, edited by Representative Jim Nuglow of Arkansas. We asked him to read from some of his recent comments. Underneath a picture of Senator Driveler,
"The honorable gentleman from Missouri is dishonoring his tailor if he thinks those pleats look good."
And about Undersecretary of the Treasury John Taylor,
"Those shoulder pads make him look worse than a donkey with wings in 100-degree heat."
Of course, the new look of America's politicians is not without its share of controversy. When Senator Barbara Boxer was in the midst of a heated speech regarding tort reform, the revealing décolletage of her Rebecca Taylor A-line gave way to what might be politely described as a wardrobe malfunction. Within minutes, Boxer's nip slip was plastered throughout the Ethernet, and public reaction was mixed.
Wow. Really?
And when it was revealed that Vermont's Senator Palatine was wearing suits cut from Italian-made fabrics, the American cotton lobby let its displeasure be known. It wasn't long before the senator was forced to call a press conference.
I want y'all to know that I have seen the air of my fashion faux pas. Today, I announce an exclusive arrangement with FUBU Clothes. That's for us, by us. This is like wearing the Constitution.
There's an old Beltway saying, the measure of a man is not the size of his inseam, but the size of his dream. It would appear, however, that for the time being, things have changed.
And thanks to Jessica Turpentine for that report. Back here in Studio 14W with Tilde. Tilde, thank you again for being here. You've been really a magnificent guest. And we wish you all the best with Spanglish. But what's next on the grand Tilde agenda?
Tell you what, I'm going to be adapting that musical Spamalot. It won all those awards, and I think that means it would make a great movie.
Fascinating. I, for one, can't wait to see it. And that about wraps things up from Studio 6L. I'm Guy Boombast, and from all of us here at No Jacket Required, thank you for joining us. Goodbye.